I'm so happy that we have our fine, F, that's fine for the Fine Foundation, but also fine for being a fine artist, resident. Emily Newman is here, and the Children's Museum's own Zena Ruiz is here, too. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And it's nice to have you both here with us. And Zena, can you talk a little bit about the Fine Artists Program and how these exhibits come about? We're going to be talking about Emily's exhibit, which is called Ice Station Zebra, and it's really cool, but I think it would be good to give tribute to the funder that makes this possible and how it all works.
Right. So the Fine Foundation funds the Fine Artists Residency. The residency has been going on for 7 years, and we have been, we've hosted over 40 artists through the program. And the residency is unique in that it doesn't necessarily focus on a product. It's not a product-driven residency. It's more about public engagement. So how does your artistic practice translate, and how can you communicate it with visitors? So Emily's project here is super amazing, and also one of the biggest projects that I've been able to pull off here, and it is a, should I spill the beans on the pot?
and let me just mention, I have the pleasure of staring at it quite a bit, because it's installed right opposite our radio studio at the opposite end of the theater, and it's a submarine. It's a submarine. You have to use your imagination a little bit. It's not, well, it we didn't bring in any water or anything like that. But for a city that already has a submarine on display, this is a little bit different, and it's just beautiful. Emily, tell me about your vision for this.
This is
Emily Newman, by the way. It's gorgeous.
It's beautiful, and I have the people who helped me build it to thank. And I keep looking behind me, which is a bad thing because it's behind me and the radio is in front of me. But yeah, Ice Station Zebra is a project that takes place actually in three countries. Pittsburgh is one of them. And the other two countries are Russia and Norway. So the ice stations in the title were actually being built in Norway and Russia. So the idea behind Ice Station Zebra follows the movie from 1968, if anyone's seen it, starring Rock Hudson and Ernest Borgnine. It's a Cold War spy thriller that follows adventures of an American submarine which is underneath the ice cap looking around for a lost satellite capsule that was dropped from a spy satellite, an American spy satellite, which is actually a true story. There was a Corona spy satellite, which in 1959 was taking pictures of Soviet military installations, and it dropped its film canister, and it was supposed to be caught by an airplane, an American plane, but the plane fumbled, and the capsule was lost out on the ice, and it was never recovered. So to this day, there is still a capsule full of secret films floating around on the ice cap, or the Soviets found it. So what this project does is it creates a kind of theatrical installation actually in the countries that the story takes place around. So we are looking, children are supposedly looking for this spy capsule. So in Norway and Russia, we have two, Norway and Russia, it's actually taking place in two towns that are on either side of the border up there, which is above the Arctic Circle. So it's Arctic Norway and Russia. And those kids up there are collaborating to leave secret messages and drop secrets to us and our submarine through this, through the ZebraCom station. So the ZebraCom station was engineered by local Pittsburgh artist and engineer Eric Singer, and it's our spy radio satellite map of the Arctic, where kids can leave secrets for each other.
Huh. And Eric Singer is an amazing artist. So if kids leave secrets, how do they do that?
Well, there's two ways. We can leave actual secrets. Sorry, I keep looking behind me because I want to look at the submarine. We can leave secrets in actual metal. Ooh, there's the wind coming
There's the
in.
Sound of the submarine. Yeah. I figured this might... not, it's okay to look back at this beautiful exhibit, but you can immerse yourself and listen at it. So you can leave them in a capsule?
Yeah, so there are two ways. We have an analog and a digital version of Leaving Secrets. So PJ Zimmerlink, actually, who's the one who designed and built the inside of the sub, created a map table and capsules that work on with a digital tracker. So what we do is we open up the capsules. This is not the version that Eric created. This is the analog version. I'll explain first. We open up the capsule. Kids can write a secret message in invisible ink, of course, ink that's only visible under black light, put their image in the capsule, and then have a look on the map table, which is actually a map of the museum transposed onto a map of of the ice cap, and go out into the museum and hide their capsule.
Oh.
Yes, and then the next group of kids who come in have a look at the map, see where the spot is marked, where the capsule is hidden, put on a parka, and take a digital tracker and go out through the museum and track the capsule, which is exactly what happens in the movie. You know,
what a great idea.
Yeah. But Eric's version works differently. In Eric's version, we're actually able to communicate with kids in Norway and Russia. So kids in Norway and Russia can drop capsules on a digital interface. So it's a computer screen that's inside the submarine. And they can leave messages. So, for example, a kid in Russia, in Nikol, which is the city where the project is taking place, can write a message, a secret message. And the thing that I really like is that nobody in Nikol can see that message. The message is only visible to the American and the Norwegian participants. And then American and Norwegian participants can use a joystick to navigate their little submarine icon over the capsule
Wow.
that they find and open up the message. And when they open it, they'll see that it's written in Russian or Norwegian. But then if they hold their cursor over it, it will magically decode and turn into English.
And you know all of these languages yourself,
I don't know
right?
Norwegian.
Oh, I thought you did. I know you know Russian.
I know Russian, yeah.
Tell me a little bit more about yourself, the countries you've lived in, and because lest you think the museum is hopping on the Russia bandwagon.
Which one?
This project, I think it was about almost a year ago that I met you when your project was being conceived here. It might even be over a year ago. And I remember some of the details, but not all of them. I know you lived in Russia for a while. Tell me a bit about how you got from here to there, you know, a little
sure.
bit about where you were raised and how you got interested in doing things like this.
Oh, okay. Well, the way that I was raised was, I was telling somebody recently that I feel like my most comfortable location is probably an airport lounge, even though that might sound sad. It's not sad. I actually feel very comfortable in airports because I was raised by parents who were actually traveling at the time. So I was born in Singapore. My father was a journalist for the Wall Street Journal. So I lived in Singapore till I was 4 and then moved to England, where I lived till I was 18, and then lived in the States for a few years. And then in 2005, I applied for a Fulbright to go to St. Petersburg, Russia, which was supposed to be 1 year. But I ended up staying for 5 years. And then I continue to go back because I actually really loved living in Russia. And I would like to clarify that I'm not a Putinist. But there are wonderful things about Russia. And I found Russians to be extremely interesting artists, especially. And Russia is a very interesting and important place to be an artist because artists can occupy a platform in the public eye that is very difficult to occupy by other people such as journalists. So, for example, many artists who I worked with in Russia actually managed to even make it onto the global stage in ways that other forms of activism or public expression are stifled. So being an artist in Russia, working with artists in Russia, was an extremely inspiring and continues to be an inspiring thing to do. And this project that I'm doing, I definitely do conceive of it as a political project. And it's a children's project, but to me, it's an echo of the kind of Cold War diplomacy that was actually quite heavily funded and supported during the first Cold War, where Russian and American kids were encouraged to think about the arms race and to think about the importance of friendship and the importance of civilian relations. So the intention of this project really is to foster very simple, friendly relationships between Russian and American kids on a very superficial, small, maybe, you know, just hello, my name is Zach, you know, Privet, я Миша, and that's enough. I just want these kids to have a point of contact.
It's profound, I think, beyond superficial, simple, but still really profound, just to be able to have made a connection with somebody that far away. And as you mentioned about Putin, somebody from Russia might think we all have characteristics of our president, regardless of who he or she is. And that's never the case for any nation.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, I guess, xenophobia makes us think that well, it absolutely must be a monolithic culture, but it's not.
Right. And I've been watching Rachel Maddow a bit recently talking about Russia. And I'd like to think about the difference between the Russians and Russians. And it's an interesting grammatical construction,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to be communicating with Russians, not the Russians.
Or I would even go one better and suggest Russian people,
yeah.
or people from Russia, people
mm-hmm.
living in Russia.
People in Russia, yeah.
But yeah, the Russians.
Yeah.
That's a.
But I like using the context of this Cold War spy thriller.
Yes.
Because it's such it lays on so thick. That essentialization and the dramatization of the conflict. So I'd like kids to actually use that language and then sort of pierce through it. You know, say like, I'm a spy, we're enemies, hi, you know, like, what music do you like? You know, just like little kind of incisions through the theatrical artifice of the relationship that we have, the relationship between Putin and Obama, you know, Clinton, Trump. Pierce through it to the humanity a little bit.
This is artist Emily Newman, who you're listening to. Her Ice Station Zebra exhibit was just launched here at the Children's Museum of Pittsburgh. It's located in the theater just opposite of our studios and gives kids a chance to play within it, leave messages either here for other kids in the Children's Museum or for kids that are engaging with similar exhibits in Russia and Norway. I was just thinking how cool it would be for a kid to introduce himself, to mention that he plays the violin, and to discover that there's a kid in Russia or Norway who plays the violin. Now, I know the movie Ice Station Zebra just a little bit, and I have a question for Zaina here at the Children's Museum, who manages public programs, I think. It seems to me, I've seen it with Daniel the Tiger, I've seen it with Dora the Explorer, you know, kids seem to love these big, oversized, costumed characters. Is there an Ernest Borgnine suit that somebody could wear and walk around and pretend to be Ernest Borgnine?
That's next. Thank you for the idea.
You know, we're going to have our make shop crew work on the costume, you know, as we speak. Those costumes.
But you know what? We did actually create a really important set element that we need to put a picture of Ernest Borgnine using it, because one of the best for me visually scenes in Ice Station Zebra, I don't want to, sorry for the spoiler, but Ernest Borgnine is actually the saboteur on the, sorry, he's the spy on
board. He's always the nice guy, too.
Not in this. So there's one scene where he's snooping around the sub, and he opens the lid on the nuclear reactor, and we don't see the reactor, we just see his face bathed in orange light. And we have a reactor in our sub that bathes anybody who looks at it with this orange light. So we should put a camera actually inside the reactor to take pictures of the Borgnine effect.
I like it. I hope folks will come. Sena, how long will it be here in the museum?
So iStation Zebra will be here through May 28th.
Lots of time to come and see it and come and see us at the same time since we're right in the same location. We just have about 30 seconds or so left. Is there anything either of you wanted to say that I didn't get a chance to ask you?
I wouldn't mind explaining the Norwegian connection because that can get a little bit lost. Yeah?
Yeah.
So Norway is actually the original NATO border with Russia. That's why this project was actually inspired, and I was invited by Norwegian curators to create this project to talk about NATO, because there's a town called Kirkenes. The two towns that are hosting the project in Russia and Norway, Kirkenes and Nikel, those are the towns that are on either side of the NATO border in the Arctic. So that's why they invited an American project to come in to talk about NATO with Russian and Norwegian kids, because it's a highly militarized zone. And obviously NATO is in the news now, and whether or not we need NATO is something that children who live up there, it's relevant and important to them.
Thank you. That's a really important distinction to note. Sena, anything else on your end?
I don't know.
There it is.
Come on down.
Come on down. PittsburghKids.org is where you can go to get directions. And the installation is here through May 28th. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you, Larry.
Emily Newman and Sena Ruiz.